The Lord be with you. It's been a week. I mean, it's been quite the year, but this week in particular has taken the cake. I noticed it in particular when I realized I couldn't connect with people by gathering inside, and I couldn't connect with people by gathering outside, and if I wanted to connect with people by going online, I would just get depressed by the news. This week has left me feeling powerless. And that's what the rulers of this world try to do to us, make us feel powerless. It's what we feel, it's what we see in the book of Exodus today. A new Pharaoh rises to be king of Egypt, a Pharaoh who does not know Joseph and all that his family has done. And so this new Pharaoh, in order to cement his own power, he goes about by trying to make Joseph's family, by trying to make the people of God feel powerless. And so he tells the people of Egypt, these Hebrews, these Israelites, these foreigners, they are a menace to our society. They are undermining our country's strength. We have to do something about them. And first he enslaves them, but that is not enough. And so he tells the people, these Israelites are bad. They need to die. And so he says to the Hebrew midwives, any baby who is born, if it's a boy baby, kill it. If it's a female baby, don't worry. Girls are powerless. They won't cause any problems. Now, in comparison to kings, it's easy to feel powerless. So Jesus has his disciples compare him to kings. When he asks them, who do you say that I am? He specifically waits until he takes them to a place called Caesarea Philippi before he asks that question. Caesarea Philippi is named for two kings, Herod Philip II, king of Judea, and Caesar Augustus, emperor of Rome. Jesus wants them to compare him to these two mighty kings. And at first the disciples say, well, you know, some people say you're John the Baptist, but of course John the Baptist was beheaded by a king. And some people say you're Elijah or Jeremiah or one of the other prophets who scolded kings and were mostly ignored by kings and were sometimes killed by kings. Which isn't a great comparison. And so Jesus says, okay, but who do you say that I am? And one of the disciples named Simon says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. In comparison to the kings of this earth, Simon says, you, Jesus, the son of a carpenter who has fishermen for friends, you are more powerful than Caesar or Philip because you are the son of the living God who is greater than any power on this earth. And in response, Jesus says to Simon, well, then you will be Peter, which means rock. He says, you will be Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades, which is to say the gates of death and hell, will not prevail against it. Now, it's important to be clear here that it's not Peter as the man who is the rock that the church is built on, because literally 5 verses later, Jesus will say to Peter, get behind me, Satan. No, Peter is a fallible man. But the faith that he proclaims in the moment, that faith that he claims for himself, that is the rock on which Jesus will build his church, and it will be stronger than any power of hell or death. And it is that power of faith that we see at work in the book of Exodus today. Because the all-powerful Pharaoh says to the powerless Hebrew midwife women, if a Hebrew baby is born and it's a boy, you gotta kill it. But those Hebrew midwives, they trust in their heart that God is more powerful than Pharaoh, and so they put their trust in God. And they refuse to do what Pharaoh says. God gives them this power, and it's a seemingly simple and silly power. It's the power to not go to work. It's the power to not kill baby boys when they're born. And it's the power to make up excuses. They say, you know, all these Hebrew women, they just pop out babies so fast we can't get there in time. And as absurd as that is, it is more powerful than the king of Egypt. And so the all-powerful Pharaoh says to the powerless Hebrew mothers, okay, if the midwives won't kill your baby boys, you kill your baby boys. Pharaoh says, take your baby boys and drown them in the river Nile, but don't worry about the girls. They won't be a problem. They're powerless. But one of these supposedly powerless Hebrew mothers, when she gives birth, she looks at the baby boy that she has given birth to. And our translation says that she sees he's a fine baby. But literally in the Hebrew, it's the same phrase that God says when God creates everything in the universe. It says that she saw that the baby was good. Pharaoh has said that the baby's bad and deserves to die, but this woman says that there is a higher power. She trusts that God's power is greater, and so she puts her trust in God's eyes instead of Pharaoh's lies, and she sees that her baby is good. And because of her faith, God gives her power, the power to follow the letter of Pharaoh's law, but not the spirit. Because this mother does indeed put her baby boy in the river Nile, but first she puts him in a basket that floats. And she floats him down the river, trusting that God will find a way to bring forth life. And what do you know? A little ways down the river, the basket floats and is found by the daughter of Pharaoh. And it says in our scriptures that Pharaoh's daughter recognizes that this must be one of the Hebrew babies that her father has sentenced to die. But it doesn't tell us what she's going to do about it, because maybe in that moment she feels powerless. But then in steps a young Hebrew girl, the baby's sister, one of these Hebrew girls that Pharaoh said, they don't have any power, don't worry about them. But this Hebrew girl, she says to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I get for you a nurse from the Hebrew women, from among the Hebrew women to nurse this child for you? And with that simple statement, this Hebrew girl shows Pharaoh's daughter that there is another way. Shows Pharaoh's daughter that she, in fact, has power. She has power to defy her father, has power to save the life of this child, can become more powerful than the king of Egypt. And all she has to do is say yes to this powerless Hebrew girl. And so Pharaoh's daughter does. She says yes. She takes the baby boy out of the water. She raises him as her own son, and she names him Moses. Now, Moses is often credited with setting his people free through the power of miracles and plagues. But before Moses can wield the power of plagues, first there has to be a greater power. The power of people that Pharaoh tried to claim were powerless. The power of the Hebrew women when they put their faith in God. The power of faith that the greatest power in the universe is not here on earth, but up in heaven. And it is this power of the Hebrew women that brings down the tyranny of Pharaoh. Because you see, when we give our faith to Jesus, Jesus gives us the power of heaven. Peter says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus not only makes Peter's faith the rock of the church, but Jesus says to Peter, I give to you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus gives Peter the power to bind and to loose. And it's easy to think right now, look, we're going through a pandemic. We're going through social strife. Our state is on fire. What good does it do to us to be able to bind things and loosen things? But that power is the power that the Hebrew women have in the book of Exodus. Those Hebrew midwives, Shifra and Puah, they have the power to bind and to loosen. They bind themselves to God, and so they set themselves loose of Pharaoh's commands. But they don't say to themselves, oh, we're more powerful than Pharaoh. No, what they simply say is, we can stay home. We can choose to stay home, and in doing so, we can save lives. We have that power also. We can stay home when going out needlessly endangers others, and we too can save lives. And Moses' mother, she doesn't say to herself, I'm more powerful than Pharaoh, I will overthrow his kingdom. No, what she simply does is sees her child through God's eyes instead of Pharaoh's lies. And we have that power also. I will say, I have been struggling in these past months because I have felt powerless of what I can do in the midst of the social and racial strife that our country is experiencing right now. And together as a congregation, we read a book called Dear Church, written to our denomination by a Black Lutheran pastor. And as he tackled all these big challenges of racial injustice, he said there is a small thing that nearly every Lutheran church can do. He said when he comes to Lutheran churches, he sees often that we wear white robes with hoods. And though he knows we don't intend it this way, he says, when I see those white robes with hoods, I can only think of another organization that wore white robes with hoods, the Ku Klux Klan. And instead of hearing what Jesus has to say about me, I can only hear what the Klan had to say about me. And I'll admit, when I first read that, I thought, well, how silly, right? I don't mean to evoke the Klan when I put on a robe, white robe with a hood. I put it on and I feel like a Jedi. But Moses' mother, she learns to see her child not through the eyes which she had been taught her whole life to see that child through. She learns to see her child through God's eyes. And so I thought to myself, what if I could look at this not through the eyes of myself, but the eyes of this pastor who is speaking to me as a brother in faith? And I realized if I had the power to help him see himself as God does, why would I not claim that power and set him free? Especially when it's so easy, right? We can wear robes without hoods. The early Christian church, they started wearing white tunics because they wanted everyone to look the same so that rich and poor wouldn't be distinguished by their clothing. And so they just wore simple white tunics. We can do that too. Also, I could wear what Martin Luther wore, which is black preaching robes. Or we could wear what St. Francis wore, brown robes. Or I could step even further into the liturgical vestment tradition, and I could put on each Sunday a chasuble, which is that poncho-looking thing that represents the apron for whoever is presiding at the Lord's Supper. They come in all the colors that match the liturgical season, and retired Pastor Don Hines is continually bringing his old ones by trying to get me to wear them. I could take him up on his wisdom for once. To say it's a simple act and it won't change the racial injustice in our society, but it is the simple act that reminds us that we are never powerless. We'll always have some option. And that is the greatest gift that these women's faith gives them in the book of Exodus. It reminds them that there is always something that they can do. And it is this gift that Moses' sister Miriam gives to Pharaoh's daughter, because Pharaoh's daughter might not believe, but Miriam sure does. And she believes for Pharaoh's daughter. And that's what we can do for one another. Because right now, as the air is filled with smoke, as ashes rain down, as we hear helicopters flying overhead to dump fire on these waters, so many people are reminded of the campfire. For so many people, it feels like all the work they've done these past 2 years to rebuild might turn to ash. And they are feeling helpless. They are feeling powerless. But your words have the power to set them free. Your words spoken over a phone, typed into a text message, written into a letter, your word can remind people that they are not their fear, that they are not their anxiety, that they are not powerless, for they are people of faith. And that faith is the rock upon which Jesus built his church, and the gates of hell and death will not prevail against it. So hold on to your faith, hold on to your power, because no matter how big the problems of this world are, your God is bigger, and God gives you that power to act in small ways that will move mountains. This year has felt like the gates of hell have opened, and we're barely halfway through. The world wants you to believe that you are powerless, but your belief in Jesus gives you the power of heaven, and even 2020 will not prevail against it. Amen.